Bye, guy, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University Africana Studies Department, retired professor also from Compton Community College, where I taught history, African American history, psychology, and ethnic studies, along with co-host Joe Hembrick, longtime educator and historian of our ancient past and various institutions, ancient institutions that affect our daily lives. Joe was a longtime educator for Linwood Unified School District, as well as Compton Unified, where he was administrator and educator. Joe was also the first African American head coach for Linwood Unified School District in football, as well as he drew a multicultural black and brown unity, had a black and brown unity mural put up at Centennial. Very conscious brother, deep researcher, very, very analytic when it comes to religious institutions that affect the daily lives of African people. Along with Rasha Key Maskani, longtime educator, math teacher for Centennial Unified, for Centennial High School, and also a researcher himself, and is responsible for this podcast and the Community Education Network. And we thank him and his staff for providing us this platform every Monday. Tonight, we're going to have just a brief discussion about the miseducation of Black people that was put forth. This is Black History Month. Mr. Hembrick introduced last time he talked about history in one of the first books that Carter G. Woodson wrote, with Miseducation of the Negro. Some people think it's still going on. And we want to get an analysis of not only the miseducation, but what should be the education of Black people and Black young people on all levels, from birth all the way up to university. So, Joe, you want to give your analysis of the miseducation of African Americans and what you think Carter G. Woodson meant and what you think of some of the solutions?
Whenever others are at the helm of your curriculum that you got to go by, that's what at all, public and private institutions in America, I don't know if any that Black people are doing the curriculum. And whatever you got the non-melanated people doing it, then, you're not going to get truth. You get what I call job training. They'll get you sharp for a job, but as far as truth, it's something you have to do for yourself. Many who have written truths that were used in education institutions end up getting terminated. I think Carter G. Woodson was fired himself from Howard University in regards to that. And the Europeans that have written the truth, I know Barry Fell was fired, but many of them, they don't even allow the true works to make it into the curriculums of various, university systems to keep the lie going about Europeans and, their history and things that they contributed to the world, which they mostly borrowed and stole from people. So to get truth, you have to go outside the box. Even a lot of Black colleges, I find the kids don't know much. It really was shocking to me a couple of years ago. I was just doing a little random study of my own, talking to a lot of that were home from school. I would ask some certain basic questions about basic people from the African past, and they didn't know what I was talking about. Never heard of Imhotep, never heard of, you know, folks like that. Garvey is missed a lot. Any black entity that leads down the road of truth is going to get squashed. So that's something people in the home got to do for themselves, for their own kids. And that's the only way they're going to get it. And a lot of our, you know, religious institution people go to churches. They're not teaching any history there either. You know, the Hebrews do, but the part that they're teaching, you know, it's a little distorted also. So, you know, those that know kind of got to create avenue for your own household as far as, you know, accumulate books and stuff on the truth so that way the children can get it and hopefully at an early age. Don't have to wait until many of us had to wait to the age that we are to find out. So I remember you had a program a few years ago, Professor Ra, at the library over there, which was, I forget what it was called, but I believe that's what you were trying to do over there on Krillin County Boulevard. That's when I first kind of got with you as far as conscious of those. Anyway, until we have some schools that we're running and we're designing the curriculums, we're going to have a problem. And even the schools that, you know, the regular school setting, reading, it seems to be, which is one of the most difficult areas, you know, amongst our youth. We can't even get a basic correction on correcting that, you know, so that the kids can read what the truth is. I know when I first came to conference, one of my old counselors was over curriculum for the district. And at that time, every person over curriculum in the district was European. And I found out that, you know, most of the kids couldn't read the textbook. And I went to her about reading classes, and she gave me some old song and dance about, you know, it can't be a department anymore, the whole language approach and all of that. Can't have labs anymore. I told her, I just left Linwood, which is 2 miles down the street, and they had two reading labs. So, you know, it's conspiracy to keep us dumbfounded and not waking up to the truth, I think, in fear of what we can become. So, that's my analysis of the whole thing. And even if we, and when we get to training on the job, like W. E. Du Bois's Talented 10th, you know, most of them don't go back. They're going to suburbia and getting away from their people, and there's no models for the youngsters to follow because folks are going out of the places. Anyway, that's my analysis of it.
I'm going to get back with you in a minute, Joe. I'm going to, Rasha Key, what do you think about miseducation? Was Carter G. Woodson correct? And if so, how do you describe miseducation and what are some solutions you see?
Well, I begin with, analyzing the whole situation. You begin with the current system that we live in, and the system is based off of color, which is we call it racism, white supremacy, and we're basically in that system. So when you're in that system, and you, I brought this up before, being dehumanized back during the Holocaust of slavery, where you were stripped of your culture totally. And then you take on this culture that you're born in. And like with our parents, you know, they had to struggle and come up in this system. And you learn in all the ways that you were being taught. Basically, you mention it all the time, taught by your oppressor. When you've been taught by your oppressor, they're not going to teach you it to get an advantage or to get equal with them. So you start off taking on all the characteristics of the oppressor, at least trying to. And then when you enter into the education arena, you're trying to figure out how to survive. And along the way, you're being taught against yourself. And you acquire all these characteristics that are unhealthy. And when you do learn something, it's not really, it could be significant in some ways, but then when you take on the cultural practices in the United States, it's morally detrimental. You know, I work with students, high school students, when I'm teaching math, and the psychology that the kids acquire coming through the elementaries, the middle schools, and you're taught in a way where you are not being successful in math, and you acquire this fear, this psychology that you're not equipped, and you take on that personality of fear when it comes to learning. And a majority of my students are afraid to speak because they're psychologically damaged from an experience that they may have had as a youngster, being ridiculed about not knowing timetables, basic math facts. So when you have this type of mentality, you're in high school, and you're in an algebra class, and you don't know the basic facts, you have this defeatist mentality that's being perpetuated in these schools. So I have to do my best to break down all these chains and these walls in our students to get them to realize that you can learn this and you can be successful at it. So it's a heck of a dynamic to come up in a system that's against you. And then, you know, it's a lot of layers that grow on you that's negative. And then we got to come up with strategies how to peel those layers back and get to the root of the issue and then reteach. So it's a challenge to teach the miseducated people. And then you have some success stories, but not enough. And so it's a constant battle to get the kids to learn, and especially learn math, because it's very critical in your sequential thinking. So it's a challenge, but you know, the ones that know have a responsibility to do something about it. And I presume to know something. So I'm working daily to dismantle this mentality that we have as people.
Okay. So Brother Joe, you still there? Brother Hembrick?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What do you think of some of the curriculum, or what do you think should be a part of the youth curriculum? On all levels, you know, from elementary to middle school to high school to college. What are some of the curriculum you think would help be a contributing factor to educating the African American in America or black people in America.
All I gotta do is teach the truth. That's all I gotta do. You know, just teach truth. But if truth is taught, it pulls the cover off the European who has claimed, made a lot of claims about his contributions to the world and civilization. For example, you know, black people being the first people on the planet and civilizing the world and everything that's in, you know, European society, philosophically, architecturally, government-wise, religious-wise, and all that comes from the Nile Valley. You know, it would be a different perspective on things for black people. Even the folks that are caught up in the, I won't say caught up, but people that practice the various religions, if they knew the true origins of, you know, where those things came from, perspective their mind, and they'll feel more more self-esteem instead of, you know, the slave mentality that a lot of us have, because that's what some of the books, you know, speak about. You know, slave obey your master. And, you know, most of them haven't even read the books that they claim to be as far as practicing the religion that they practice. And you know, to talk about the, for example, we talk about, you know, Brother Rashid Keith talking about the thing of enslavement. Well, you know, what about the enslavement 1,000 years before the Europeans? That's all he ever even spoke about. So, you know, that was going across North Africa and reached West Africa 1,000 years before the European came. So that was another detriment to, you know, what we had believed and practiced before. So, you know, you bring that up to some of the brothers that are Muslims in the nation, got a problem. They don't think it matters and whatnot. But this is the thing about the truth. You can blow it up, bury it, blast it, it's always going to rise and take its proper place. And, you know, you got all, for example, in colleges, you get Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. But they never talk about where they got their philosophy from. They didn't originate those. And so even you know, the system of government, the only thing, I can't think of anything that they originally came up with other than warfare and destroying other civilizations. If he can be credited with creating anything, is that, and that pretty much alone, as far as what I can see through all of my studies, because everywhere he went, he tore down what was there. You know, that's just his MO. And the fact that he's really one of us, that he don't want to acknowledge that either. You know, from the Ice Ages, where he was transformed into what he is, in his characteristics physically and mentally. So it's only one race, it's the human race. And you know, through religions and whatnot, he got everybody thinking, you know, different stuff. Noah, everybody killed, and, you know, God creating a black man, white man, yellow man, red man, Tower of Babel and all that, you know. But anyway, you know, the truth is the truth.
Professor Rock, can I add to what I was saying earlier?
Yeah.
Now, another thing that inhibits learning, or not inhibits learning, but that leads to miseducation is the intentional misleading through various mediums like internet, entertainment, the system, for the system to remain in power, they have to create all of these diversions to direct attention away from what people should be doing. And that contributes to a lot of miseducation. You know, we've had shows on the music that they promote, which is negative. You have internet access where people can go on the internet, young kids, and access almost anything to implant things in their minds that's not good for them. Mm-hmm. So we have a whole bunch of fractions that takes away from, the significance of vital education. So just wanted to add that.
Okay. But what are some solutions from the standpoint of, Clark G. Woodson was a deep thinker. He, that's all he did was write and think. He was so deep into history that people around him thought he was arrogant, thought that he, was just too involved in the history of Black people. Sometimes he isolated himself, if you read about his biography. But, when you talk about miseducation, and the family is the primary education unit, so some of that miseducation comes from families that were miseducated and or didn't put the emphasis on education and incentives to their children, or even learn themselves what should be learned. Very few parents know what are the qualifications to get a high school diploma. Very few parents know what are the requirements to get an AA degree from a community college. Very few parents know what it takes to get a BA. They just send their kids to school. And then you have a cadre of households that are foster parents and extended family that may not put the emphasis on education. Because, as Amos Wilson would say, that, Black children are different and special. And you have to treat them like that way, that they're special. And that you want to motivate them from birth to the concept of wanting to learn. Most children want to learn when they are babies. Then they somehow, when they get in the third and fourth grade, that begins to decline. And that's what Carter G. Woodson was saying about miseducation. That's what Joe was saying about them not teaching the kids the truth. And that's what you're saying with regard to your perspective. But, Malcolm said that wherever Black people is, it's a battleground. It's a battle line or battleground. And I tend to believe that. I accept that. And that means a home too. Many of the parents sometimes are responsible for the person, for the concept their children have about intellectual and basic skill entailment. Learning math, science, reading, those are transferable basic skills. That's what Malcolm meant when he said, one of the worst things that the white man did was let me learn how to read. But as Joe would say, Malcolm learned the skills of reading, but he read different things. He read things that was part of his liberation struggle versus just reading what the man gave him to read and accepting that as the body of knowledge. And as Joe said, the truth is the truth, and that's true. The foundation of truth is more truth. Sometimes truth change, and truth is tricky. People can exploit the truth and misuse it and use it as a weapon. And at the same time, but it's an uplifting and authenticity of whatever you're learning. I mean, the whole foundation of knowledge is truth, and the foundation of truth is more truth. That's why Malcolm said, one science that rewards our research is history. You know, history is not only then, it's now. But the point is that we're in a struggle. And, as Joe said, we learn about the greatness of Black people, the Imhoteps, the Akhenatens, the Queen Nzinkas, the Hatshepsuts, the Cleopatra, the Queen of Sheba, Makeda. All of those things are good. The Mary McLeod Bethune, the Harriet Tubmans, all of these things are good. You know, and we want our kids to learn about personalities and things. But we also want to know what they were thinking. And we want to know about things like Freedom Journal, the first Black newspaper, and the North Star, and all those were about liberation, about struggle. Very few people teach their children today that you're at war, you're in a war. And it's not just, they kill some of us physically, but they want to kill you emotionally and spiritually. What religion does, it kills your liberation spirit and your activism by thinking that there's a mystical God that's going to come and save you, or that will reward you for being not sinning, not lying, not stealing. And but you know, that's a whole different game when you're at war, because all is fair in war. Love and war. So, but getting back to the point where Malcolm was saying, the battleground is everywhere. Very few parents teach their kids that they have to struggle to get an education. That at one time there was a denial, as Joe would bring out from a historical standpoint, of us learning, period. And then here comes segregation, and the whole purpose of segregation was to teach a different curriculum. You understand? In many ways, a different curriculum, because a lot of it was to how to our parents used to say, you have to be 10 times smarter than a white person. And, and they tied education to job. And that was the incentive, get a high school diploma so you get a job. Now, that high school diploma won't get you anything, but that was what they were saying. And then, Booker T. Washington, pull yourself up by the book street, by your boots and all that. That was all tied. That's what, when you look at the Black, 100 Black colleges, AT&T, agriculture, A&M, agriculture and mechanical. Schools, and it's all about tying it to jobs. Then you go to these schools, and then you face racism when it comes down to jobs. Unless you go into entrepreneurship and open up your own business, it's going to be, you got Black people with degrees that can't get hired, and things of this nature. So you look at the 100 Black colleges, which were independent. Most of them were land grant. Most of them were religiously based. They were considered safe schools because they didn't teach liberation. They taught accommodation. And so some people broke the mold, like a Martin Luther King, went to, Morehouse and a few others. They broke the mold, but the majority of them you know, stayed in the mold, you know, and they just want to learn how to make it in America, not how to liberate or contribute to liberation struggle and achievement. How do you motivate a kid to want to learn? How do you motivate a kid, a youngster, to appreciate learning? What are the incentives you give them to want to get an education, to want to go to school and take care of business, and at the same time know who they are, know their purpose, and have a sense of direction where they're going? Now, you know, you two, you know, y'all got young people that y'all educate, you know, you discuss these issues. Your grandchildren, I mean, they focus on Russia. And your granddaughter, who's going to be on again, and your grandson, I mean, I don't know if that's your nephew or grandson, a young man, but the
point my is, grandson.
Yeah, I mean, they were focused. I mean, you know, and that's because of the consciousness, you know, within that environment that, and that you be a part of. The same thing with Joe. His daughter's going to be a doctor, you know. I mean, she was focused. There are so many kids that didn't have that consciousness or that focus. I'm going to get to you, Joe. And then, you know, so the teaching kids to want to learn, not just that, and that will supersede them that they can't learn. Because the European approach to Black children is that they all need special ed, all of them, because they don't understand the system. Joe, you had your hand up?
No, I didn't. I was just,
It's up.
You know, go ahead and say what I did with my daughter. You know, cause I got two of them. And one went, you know, I didn't raise her in my household, but, the one that was raised in my house, you know, I was talking to her before she even came out. We were reading and talking to her before she was even born. And so, the first 6 years of her life, you know, my wife was in a big educational position where she didn't really have the time. So it was on me. I was doing everything, literally taking to school, dropping off the homework, cooking, doing the hair, the bath, bedtime story, the whole nine yards. And, one thing that really helped was a lot of exposure. You know, kids need exposure to kind of cultivate that learning aspect within them. So I tell parents, you know, you never know what, you know, your kid might like. So take them through as many things as you can. I know in the summertime, I had to take my daughter to the Science Center and the Natural History Museum. That's like when I was a golf fanatic, I'd drop her off and go play golf all day and come back and pick her up. But, you know, you never know what light is going to turn a kid on. All people are gifted in something. And so they need to be exposed to the various things out there in order to see what grabs them. And this doctor stuff and all this with my daughter, this was her goal. She was 3, 4 years old. We didn't drive her to that. In fact, her preschool teacher told me what she was going to be when she was 3, 4 years old. And, you know, she's worked towards that. Then I just taught her how to focus. You know, when you're in the classroom, because that's what I did with my players. You know, coaches were talking. We had the two things. We do the eyeball thing. You focus on what's being said. You sit up front. You know, you look in that teacher's consoles. Don't let nobody distract you of what, you know, is being given from the instructor. And then there's little incentives. It was all kids love Mickey D's and all that. I had a little game with her. I pull out a pocket full of change and we'd be on the way home. And if she couldn't add it up correctly, we didn't stop at McDonald's. We kept on going. So that was an incentive to it. And stuff like that. You gotta motivate kids to want to get it. And so that ain't the only way, but there's various ways if mathematics, Rasha Key, when I used to sub a lot of classes, and I know exactly what you're talking about with kids that lack the basic fundamentals. And I would tell them, it's just these basics. You get these basics, you can learn a formula. You can learn a rap in 20 minutes and you just heard the song. You can earn, you can learn a mathematical formula. But where most kids get off track at and make mistakes is in the basics: add, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's all math is, really. And the other is just a formula. So
Yeah.
anyway,
So to add to that, Joe, if you know those four basic skills and learn the basic skill, just the basic ones, you can do any math. Any math. Yeah.
exactly. And that's what I would tell. And then I would also tell them that your ancestors invented mathematics. So don't tell me it's hard. Your people invented it. And they look like, what? My people invented it? Like, yeah, how you think you built a pyramid? And these white folks ain't figured out how you did it. You know what I'm saying? And I would talk that to special ed classes too. Because I tell them that most these geniuses in the world that they use in the school system at one time were classified as special ed. And I want to say something that I learned today, looking at some on Dr. Valentine. What's this? Not Freud, but what's the one that's a genius? The theory of relativity.
I'm saying.
About his early childhood and stuff. And kind of find that Einstein worked in the patent office for scientists. When scientists were coming with discoveries, he would get his hands on the patent, but he was never scholarly in science at all. He stole what people were submitting to be patented. I found that out about him today. So I'm like, wow, that's something I learned for the day. Is like, and I know some black folks that got his picture sitting up in their office. He's all this and that, but he was really a crook, just like Plato, Aristotle, and the rest of them. Doing the same thing, just like what they did the stuff that Elijah McCoy invented. But they came up with the saying, is this the real McCoy? Yeah, because they stole it from Elijah McCoy. You know what I'm saying? So, we don't have control of these institutions where information is coming through, anything can be said. And I want to say this, and I'm going to be through. As far as the religion goes, I knew a lot of it anyway, but a lot of it's coming through Brother Jabbar's book. Anybody that was opposed to the truth, what it was before they came up with the Hebrewism and the Christianity stuff, got knocked off, got annihilated. So, and I remember one time I was reading the Bible, it talked about the beheaded saints. And I know when Islam first hit the scene, it was like submit to Allah or meet your maker, whoever you think it was. And if you didn't submit to Allah, your head got cut off. So when these things are pushed throughout a society about making the people conform, you kill enough of them, then, the rest of it's going to take care of itself. And that's what has happened in a lot of this so-called, education system that we have. Go on, Rasha Key. Look like you got some on the screen, Sean. You on mute.
This is the paper that's on the website, and it's called Positive Math Perspective: The Elimination of Negativity. The things that we were mentioning is in this paper. Then also it has a parent guide in there for our parents to look at. And it's breaking down that negativity of math. And so that's Rod, you said, is there any, solutions? Let's talk about solutions and ways you can help with that.
Let me just add this little perspective also that I used to do when I was dealing with math students. And I, trying to deal with teachers that didn't want to, conform or, get or start where the kids were. And I would tell them all the time, you got to use stuff from their environment. If you're using something from their environment that they can identify with, they'll be more apt to pay attention. For example, you talk about liquids. You talk about gallons, quarts, half pint, this and that. You know, use a 40-ounce old English 800 or something. They all can identify with that because they've all seen it or heard about it. Okay, if you drank so much, how much is left? And this will get them, or you could be cutting up dope or bagging up weed or whatever from an ounce. The kids know what you're talking about, and then they'll be more apt to get into the lesson, if you follow what I'm saying. I mean, one time I was teaching on, what is that, during the 30s when you couldn't buy no alcohol?
Prohibition.
Prohibition. And I told him, like, what if you couldn't buy a soda nowhere? If it was against the law to buy a soda, to drink soda, what would you do to get them to get into prohibition? Because the sodas they can identify with. And that's just something I use as a teacher to get kids motivated to get into the lesson by giving them something from their world that they know about that they see all the time. But that's it. I'm good.
Yeah. You try to put it in a realm in which they can identify with the objects and the reality of their communities and household. And from that standpoint, that once they leave the home and they go to school, it's a different language, different reality that's in the books and the methodology that some teachers teach. But they go by the curriculum, the examples, the tests, the requirements that the state or the federal government set, from the Secretary of Education and the Federal Department of Education, along with the state. Each state is different from the standpoint of them teaching what they're teaching, from that standpoint of requirements. Some of them are different, but at the same time, they all contribute to the theologizing of white people as the smartest and as gods that are responsible for their freedom and their liberation, and that they're letting them come to school, but they don't teach the struggle of black people that made them let us come to school. When you look at the education system, how much of it is indoctrination? When you go to college, your general education requirements are sometimes more than your major. You know, you can be a sociologist, and it may be at the most 40 units, from 36 to 40 units in your major. But there's 52 general ed in Cal State. And that standpoint. And many of the black colleges use that standard also in order to get state funds and things of this nature. They have to teach some of the requirements. In other words, they make you take United States history, United States politics. They make you take three different English classes, one, comprehension, writing, and then literature. Then they make, so that's 9 units there. Of law division, just law division. This is after you got out of high school. Can't use your high school class. You can take a college class while you're in high school and use that. But if you took biology in high school, you got to take biology in college. It's a whole new different level. of experiencing. And so my point is that sometimes you look at school as something that is a child care center, a theater for them to act, a playground. They don't go there. So many of them don't go there with the mindset that I'm in struggle and I got to prepare for my future. What am I going to do when I get out of high school? You know, that type of direction. You know, you need direction. You need to have a mentality. And then, you know, they end up, you know, trying to learn things that they should have learned in elementary school once they get grown. You know, I mean, it's a challenge. So my point is that, you know, you getting kids to want to learn and getting the kids that don't want to learn and turning them around is a challenge. But many times when you have kids that don't want to learn, you pass them because you're in an grade age system. You don't want a kid 18 and still in the ninth grade because he flunked every class. You move them on because they'd be too old and they'd be too dominant of the other ninth graders that's coming along.
Professor Rob, question. Do you, what is the solution to social promotion? What, do you advocate social promotion or what is your take on social promotion?
Well, I think that you have to deal with the reality of the kid, mentality in social promotion. What is his problem? As well as promoting him, you also have to deal with why you have to socially promote him and get him to see that being socially promoted is not necessarily a thing that he should be proud of. And that is a way for him to get through school, not caring, because they're gonna pass me eventually anyway. Now, some people turn around, but most times when you socially promote kids, that jacket follows them all the way. And from the standpoint of evaluating them as a human being or a person, it diminishes. You know, you can finish school, you're the problem, you didn't do no studying. So you use that as a measure of how you see the kid. There's reasons why kids, young people, get in a situation and going through a situation where they need to be socially promoted. Just like they said for police reform, they need to have intervention for the mentally ill. Sometimes when you see kids that are not performing, there need to be structures of intervention from that standpoint of really finding out what's going on, because as I was saying, children are babies. You know, they want to walk, they want to talk, they want to learn. They want to grab things, they want to explore. They're hungry for information. They're listening to grown folks, they're learning words, they're repeating words, you're doing all of them. Then all of a sudden, there's a decline. I don't need to know this. Or as Joe said, not only do they, you can teach them, they learn from the streets. They learn from the streets. They learn from what their environment. And if that environment is a hustle, You know, I mean, we used to learn things from the barbershop, from the pool hall, from watching people play tonk, dice. And, you know, we learned those languages and that mentality that you can, you don't need school because you can hustle your way through life. Some choose that. But I think social promotion is a net. We had it on the continent. It's our age grade type of a situation in the educational community on the continent of Africa. And that wasn't European, that was us. I mean, but we learned things to contribute to the uplifting of the community. You know, to be a good hunter, to be a good fisherman, to be a good protector, a defense person. Those skills versus the intellectual. I mean, when you learn basic skill, and should they be teaching civics? You know, I mean, you ask kids, you know, who's your city council? Who's your school board? Who your, you know, are you registered to vote? Are you going to contribute in those areas? Why you should? I mean, that helps with the struggle. I mean, you know, how many of them, you know, they got rid of civics classes. In fact, they got rid of wood shop and metal shop, basic skill of vocational, introduction to vocational skill. I mean, we used to be, make a lamp, make shoe shine boxes, make gifts for your parents, arts, and learn how to shellac and how to sand things down smooth and how to have projects. And you know, but the thing is that how do you get kids to want to get A's and get excellent? That's a part of what Joe was saying, our history of creation and building the pyramids, being the first doctors, being the first architect, all of that was a part of African history because we were the first people on Earth, so we did all those things first. But go ahead, Rashida, if you have some other points.
If I can chime in on answering this question about regarding social promotion, one of the best examples I've run across in my career was Dr. Freeman at Willowbrook. I can remember when those kids, when they weren't up to par in a particular subject, they took two of them. They weren't allowed to advance until they reached a certain level. And he had incentives, you know, coming and going. Dances every Friday, a movie every Friday. And if you didn't miss any classes and passed your test and got up to snuff, that was the incentive for the kids to want to do it and to get it so they could participate in these other activities. I know when I was at Compton High, when Wade was the principal, if we didn't have any tardies for certain at the time, we were the incentive was a picnic. And nobody wanted that messed up. Although at the picnic, we was doing a lot of stuff we shouldn't have been doing, but at least we wasn't in class and we was in a recreational type activity. But one, and I want to mention this too, because if a kid is not reading by the third grade, I remember I looked at a study one time, that's how they were basing how many prisons they were going to build by the number of kids that could not read by the third grade. And, you know, academia has its place in school. But when they got rid of the industrial arts program, all those programs that Professor Rogers mentioned, you know, what happened to those kids that excelled in wood shop, machine shop, auto shop, and all the metal shop, all of those things? Because, you know, everybody's not going to be a academician. But from those industrial arts programs, when a kid graduated from high school, he would have some skills to where he could go earn a living, if you wasn't going to college, you know, and that's something I tried to get installed at Centennial, when, Todd Irving was there.
Like, excuse me, Joe. We do have some of those classes. It's just not as much as it used to be. We have some. We have the auto shop. We got the cooking. We got the nursing. We have some of these technological classes, you know. So yeah, it still exists. It's just not as extensive. Go ahead, carry on. I just want to.
But I remember at a time where they wiped it all out. You know, at one time you couldn't get those because they was all on the academic thing, test scores and all that stuff. So anyway, I know they're back to a degree, but I remember at one time they were really being eliminated. I know the guy that was running and stuff, and that's what he used to talk about all the time. This older brother who sued me on the real estate thing, on Top Logan, that was one of his big things, that they were cutting all those programs out. And you got a kid needs something to make him want to come to school. You know, and oftentimes it was those industrial art classes that had kids coming to school. It was everybody not reading a literature book and all of that, doing book reports and all that stuff. So anyway, but Freeman to me had the best model. When I was in Linwood, I used to get a lot of Mr. Freeman's kids because the parents didn't want them to go to Centennial, so they would come to Linwood High. And I never got one of them that wasn't real sharp from the program that he was running over at. Matter of fact, they had a waiting list of people to waiting trying to get into Willowbrook. He had field trips. He had buses there every day taking kids all over the place, exposing them to different stuff. So he had the program and he had the incentives there. And the kids were really excelling. But that's the best model I've seen.
And they fired him.
Yeah, I know.
Had him off for taking kids to Disneyland.
Well, they
Magic Mountain or something.
They wanted him to go to Compton High, and he didn't want to do it. And Brown Lee, they tried to force him to go to Compton High, and he didn't want to go. We end up packing up going to Inglewood. Yeah. But anyway. And they didn't have no custodians at the school. The kids knew better to throw paper on the ground. All this kind of incentives and stuff. So he's the best model I've run across in all my days.
Yeah.
But now,
hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Sister making it happen here, and she also mentioned we have robotics. We have that also.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, it seemed like they took out some of greetings, everyone. Greetings, brothers. It seemed like they took out a lot of the trays, but they're trying to bring them back and they kind of rotate them. I know that food nutrition was one that was really struggling, but the automotive finds its way to stay. The wood tech is gone, which is really critical, I think, in terms of building and remodeling. So hopefully they'll find value in that and bring that back.
Yeah, but as Joe brought out, there was a decline because the emphasis was on testing. Testing. They began to put so much emphasis on testing and giving incentives for test performance. Teachers were getting, if their kids did good on those proficiency tests. And measuring that, so it was a lot of emphasis on that with regards to teachers in public schools. But at the same time, I agree that there may be some measure of students that are going to some vocational. When I was at junior high, we had agriculture, we had drafting, wood shop, metal shop, electric shop. All of those were art classes. There were things that you can make. That's what I think that's what Joe's saying. Right now, like you said, they're trying to bring some of them back. I think Dr. Dre or some of them is building the performing arts at on Compton High of the theatrics. But I agree with Joe, the emphasis of counselors or counselors being just disciplinary versus dealing with and only dealing with students that they think going to go to college are performing well. And those kids that are not, it's all about suspension. It's all about discipline, that troublemaker. Just say, just don't cause no problem. Just go in the back of the room, put your head down, and teach your passion. You know, that was the mentality that many youth had with regards to education. But, you know, I may be wrong.
That's a Rob.
Yeah.
That's what Sister Making It Happen do. She's one of our counselors in the district.
Yeah. And how much, Sister, how much do you deal with discipline versus counseling?
So my new role, so at the high school level, most of it is scheduling and academic planning, not discipline at all. Maybe first level, mild, very, very low level. But as it gets to severity, their counselors are removed from that part of the connection with the student if there's a severe type of discipline issue that requires a dean or assistant principal or something like that. But at the middle school, I'm doing more social emotional. So I'm still dealing with discipline on some level, but I'm not the first point of contact. There's an intervention gentleman, Mr. Miller. He deals mostly with the discipline. He's not a counselor. He's like an intervention, PBIS, positive behavior intervention strategist person.
That's interesting. Because when I was in high school as a teacher, most of the counselors were just dealing with discipline. That was in the 80s. I mean, early 70s. And Rescue Me Joe at Linwood, discipline was the major role of counseling. Is that correct? Joe?
I'm not sure about that. I kind of handle my own. I wouldn't send anyone to the office. But nowadays, from talking to my boy who works security at Centennial, they're kind of like anti-suspension. They don't want the kids suspended. And this is something I'll never understand. The kids that were sent to alternative schools because of the issues, they have them on the regular campus of the high school, which I'll never understand.
Okay. Sister Making It Happen was with that last year, so she can speak on that. She can kind of clear that up, why they did what they did.
Well, to some extent, I spent 4 years with that program, and it was what do they call it? Integrating onto the site. So I guess the model is that the kids that need credit recovery, that need continuation, that it would happen on the campus, but not part of the campus. So they're on the campus, they try to keep them separated, but they do share lunches. So that whole dismantling of the one school, there's many, many reasons why, which of course I'm not part of that logic as to why, but the primary reason is, to keep the kids at their site so that the credit recovery can occur there, and they can still be with their peers and still be at their home school. And in theory, the counselors that can still work with them. That's kind of where it is now. Each high school in Compton, the comprehensive schools have a satellite program. The early college is early college, so I guess it's not necessarily comprehensive. So it's not there. The students don't meet the standards. They are sent to their respective home school from early college.
Well, when I was at Linwood, I taught continuation It was on Wright Road with Miss Chris Wormley. Was that her name, Joe? Miss Wormley? Yeah, and she was the principal. And the kids, they only go to school half a day. There was no homework from that standpoint, even though I had a tutoring program on the campus. You know, some of them, you know, you try to get them back into the mainstream of school, but it's not easy trying to get them back into regular school, because most of them are gang affiliated. Many of them are street affiliated, and many of them just don't have a home. I mean, because many parents wouldn't let their kids go to continuation. You'd get in trouble if you wasn't going to school right. Well, somehow these kids didn't have that type of structure, and they fell through the cracks. And then, based upon their skill, sometimes they were placed into continuation just based upon their lack of academic performance. So rescue me if I'm wrong. Have they changed that, Miss Make It Happen?
Well, the model has definitely changed. The shift in the thought about alternative ed has shifted a lot. And so, you know, the district looked at the model programs, and one of the model programs is a comprehensive continuation school called Vail in Montebello. So that we kind of went there to look at things, but Compton is insistent on having these satellite campuses on within the high school. So that's the...
Is that what they mean when they say restorative justice?
And since Compton is insistent on doing that, that's kind of how it's been probably for the last 6 years. Like I said, I was with the program the last 4 years. Mm. And prior to that, I was, most of my time was at the high school. So... working directly with the alternative ed definitely changed my perspective. It's a great program. We need it. It is, from my, you know, experience, best at one site. Having it dispersed at three different places is not good for the program or the students, as far as I can see. And it works best when they're at a comprehensive place. But this is a new model, and you know, this is how it was designed in our district.
But what we was asking, what are some of the things that you think should change in school to make kids want to learn and want to go to school?
Well, you know, again, this new role focusing on social emotional learning, I just find that, you know, I'm able to check in with the kids more. So having someone that they connect with is a big thing. You know, there's no way around going to the place unless, you know, your parent decides to take on that responsibility and obligation themselves. So by law, you have to be there. So with that understanding, you know, well, now that it's the law and this is where you add, and so we have to do what's best to make sure that we're satisfying that law so our parents don't get ticketed or arrested or whatever the issue is, because by law, you have to be in school in a compulsory situation. And that's where we are in California and in the United States of America. So they have to be in school unless their parents are going to homeschool them, which is a whole nother mindset of responsibility. So the ones that come and choose to, because they don't have a choice and they have to be there, what I find that makes them come or connect is, again, connecting with an adult, finding someone that they connect with, whether it's a counselor or a teacher or a coach, or they have to have a good relationship with someone that they trust that is pouring into them. It may not be a teacher, it might be a teacher. And definitely having programs, things that they're interested in, you know. So taking out courses that the kids, you know, that are of value makes it, you know, more difficult for them to come to school. And they're really focused on the technology piece in terms of the high tech world we're in. So that's where a lot of the trades have gone to. So again, connecting, having a good relationship, and having something of interest and being involved with things are what I find that helps them, whether it's a sport or a club,
I guess
Who
we'll.
determines what they're going to teach and what they're going to offer the kids? And how do you place kids? Is it through placement tests or just counseling and trying to find out their interests? I mean,
Well, definitely,
what determines? I mean, you counseling them, right? So do you develop an academic plan, an educational plan, or is it just you getting them motivated to perform or perform in the classes that they, I mean, you know, when a kid comes to school, they already got their class. Many parents, like, can say, I want my kid in Spanish. You can't take Spanish. You know what I'm saying? You can't take this. You can't take that. You know, and my question to you, who determines what classes kids get?
Okay. So
what role does the kid have in deciding that?
Master's.
So from my perspective, they have a role to choose. I mean, you have your standard requirements that's, you know, the state mandated requirements. And then you have your A through G requirements, which, you know, the district as a local agency decides that they want their students to meet these requirements to be eligible for second post-secondary education. But in terms of the level, whether you get special ed or honors or AP or general ed, of course, it does depend on your test scores. It does depend on your interests, but primarily your past performance and your test scores. And whether you do have an IEP or a program that's already been, you know, determined the type and the level of intensity of courses that you would take. But if you want Spanish, you can ask for Spanish. And at the high school level, the counselors have to create an academic plan for the students. They have to have a plan. They have to have a four-year plan, and they're working on a six-year plan so that it's clear what the students need. But we want to encourage parents to engage and talk about goals, academic goals, career goals, so they'll know and they're meeting the needs of the family and what the child wants and desires. And that's my perspective as a counselor. But generally speaking, there is a four-year planner. They're very technical now in the counseling component. They are conferencing. They're looking at, you know, dashboards and test scores and all kinds of data to make decisions. It's not just a feel-good session. They have to use data in the
what
world.
Percentage, what percentage of the kids get AP classes? And how do they qualify for AP classes?
Right. So I'm not looking at the data in front of me. And again, the last time I was in high school, comprehensive high school was maybe 5 years ago. Alternative ed kids don't take AP classes. So the last group of kids that I worked with did not take AP classes because they're deficient. So, the college going culture has built up, and the AP classes are based on requests. Definitely look at your ability. So if you are a 1 point something student, then 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get an AP class, even if you want it. But, you know, if your parent pushed hard enough, you probably could, because it's like Burger King, it's have it your way, it's whatever you want.
Well, Rob, they have prerequisites, and you have to get a certain grade in a certain class in order to get into those. That was my experience. But I just want to go back to the alternative school situation.
And that's still the case. You still have to have prerequisites. You can't just jump into something. That's where they look at your history. They want to see what you've done to make sure that you have the necessary courses to go forward.
I just want to mention this about the alternative schools on the regular school site. And all that connection stuff you're talking about is fine. But what happens is, those kids that are on the campus that normally would be at an alternative school, they're there and they're intimidating the other students. Students getting jacked, students getting jumped on, getting their money took, and all of this kind of stuff going on. They don't have bathroom attendance anymore, from what I understand. And that's the first place where all this stuff takes place. I know when I first, during my time at Centennial, a lot of the top students were intimidated to be there, and they would leave and go to other schools because of that. And that's why I wasn't an advocate of having the alternative school students on the regular school site. I thought it was absurd because of that reason alone, because I experienced it a whole lot. And I was dealing with all the discipline on the campus. You know, in the days that I wouldn't be at school, all kind of stuff would fly off the chain. But now that those kids are on the campus, I can imagine what those top flight students are going through trying to go to school every day.
Yeah, I'm not an advocate, you know, for it at all myself personally. I agree in a sense that they definitely need to be in one site.
Right, exactly.
Those are the local agencies, and the local agencies are making decisions, and that's why we have to make sure parents are engaged so they can be part of these decisions. Otherwise, we just look up and decisions are made, and we don't know how they happen.
Right, like Brawley, one of the first speeches he made was having the kids safe. School safety was a big issue, and the first person he cut was the bathroom attendant. And I told him to his face, I said, "Man, you talk about safety, and you're cutting the first line of defense for a kid is the bathroom attendant. Where you think bullying goes on? In the locker room and in the bathroom where no adults are." And that's why it was so big for administrators and counselors. And I had a rotation group of teachers during your prep period to be out during passing periods, because no adults are out there, stuff goes on. You need to have an adult presence out looking and observing to see what's going on the campus. And a lot of them sitting in the offices on the phone, eating chicken wings and all this old kind of stuff. I mean, one time, this principal was there, never came out, right? And there was an incident in the hallway, and she tried to intervene. And the kids didn't even know who the hell she was. The kids were like, "Who the hell are you?" They didn't even know she was the principal. This kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying? So adult presence is mandatory for a safe campus. And if you don't have safety, you can't have school. And that's the bottom line.
Well, we're going to continue this. Brother Rashiki, you want to say what's going on Wednesday? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. We have my granddaughter coming back on for part three for her interview. And then we'll conclude that and move on. What about you, Professor Rob?
I'm trying to lock down Carl Douglas, who worked with Johnny Cochran in the OJ case, and he's doing a lot of lawsuits, police killings. His office is supposed to call me back. I'll let you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Trying to get him for Monday.
All right. I can't wait for that. When we lock him down, that'll be a good one.
All right.
All right. So we on pause mode. So each one teach one. And Conscious Corner, thanks for coming, everybody.
Yeah, I want to thank Joe for that insight about alternative schools, because, like he said, safety is the locker room, the bathrooms, and on the way home and on the way to school. Those are, you know, that's why you used to have safe ways, safe sports. And it's a challenge, man, because, you know, kids getting their money took or getting beat up, or it creates a problem when you have that.
Yeah, when my last year's a centennial, we had like it was called a safe passage program.
Yeah,
funded through the state. Police officers, probation officers, and security along routes for kids. Come to school and walk home from school.
For the rest of this, it will be coming out your
nose. We even coordinated with the public transportation on the buses for them to be at a certain time to pick them up so they can get on out of it. But anyway, I guess all that's dead now.
Yeah. All right then, brothers. Thanks, Joe, for that insight. And thank you, Miss, make it happen. Keep up the good work.
All right. Good night.
Thanks, guys. Good night. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings.